Radio Prague News.
A man has died in an explosion at a Czech army facility. A court rules that a girl may not wear a hijab in school. And Seznam.cz is to launch a TV station. One soldier died and another was injured following an explosion at a Czech army building in Vyškov, around 30 kilometres from Brno, on Tuesday. The military academy complex has been sealed off, but a spokesperson said there was no danger of further blasts. The incident, which took place before 9 a.m, is believed to have been an accident. The explosion took place in a basement area of the building, which houses both living facilities and offices. A Somali girl who was barred from wearing a hijab at a Prague secondary school has lost an appeal in which she was seeking an apology and 60,000 crowns in compensation from the institution. Prague's municipal court on Tuesday confirmed a previous ruling under which the girl's allegation of discrimination was dismissed. The plaintiff had argued that wearing the veil was an expression of her religious conviction. However, a municipal court judge said that the school, which prepares students for a career in medicine, had to remain, and I quote, a neutral environment. The internet company Seznam.cz has applied to the Council for Radio and Television Broadcasting for a license to operate a TV station. The project is envisaged as a classic TV channel available via terrestrial transmitters, satellite and cable. Last year, Seznam.cz launched the news website Seznamspravi.cz, which carries video content. The new TV station should be funded by advertising. The president of the Czech Academy of Sciences, Eva Zajímalová, presented a prestigious award to three top scientists at a ceremony in Prague on Tuesday. The Premium Academia Prize was accepted by Petr Baldrian, an environmentalist and soil fungi expert, Michal Farník, a physicist who specializes in the atmosphere, and Jan Flusser, an informatics expert who works on processing images. All three of the scientists have also received some 30 million crowns toward their research activities in the next 6 years. The Quartet, a new film by Czech director Miroslav Krobot, will receive its world premiere at the Chicago International Film Festival in the US this coming Saturday. Audiences in the Czech Republic will get their first chance to see the movie on the 30th of October. The Quartet is a comedy drama revolving around a group of string players. It follows the director's 2014 debut Nowhere in Moravia, which drew domestic audiences of 150,000 people. The weather, it should be rainy with temperatures of around 13 degrees Celsius in the Czech Republic on Wednesday. Similar weather is forecast for the coming week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, we look at a move to tackle the relatively high Czech suicide rate. We curtain raise the upcoming Labour Cup, and later we look at a man who often walks alone and for thousands of miles. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Every day, approximately 4 Czechs die by their own hands, putting the Czech suicide rate above the EU and global average. In an attempt to improve the situation, the National Institute of Mental Health has launched an unusual project, mapping places where suicides are frequently committed and proposing measures to decrease that frequency. Ruth Frankova reports.
The suicide rate in the Czech Republic has been gradually decreasing for the past 3 years, reaching the lowest point in the country's history. But despite the trend, it still stands above EU and world average. Approximately 1,500 Czechs kill themselves every year. And what is even more alarming, suicide is the most common cause of death among young Czechs. Mental health experts have repeatedly criticized the fact that the Czech Republic lacks an effective help network and prevention program. Alexander Kasal from the National Institute of Mental Health.
Unfortunately, we are still lacking an overall program or strategy, even though the Ministry of Health has repeatedly supported suicide prevention. The World Health Organization and other organizations are also recommending a broad-based approach to the problem. There are crisis helplines and we have a network of psychiatric care, but we are still lacking an overall approach to the problem.
Within a social psychiatry research program, the National Institute of Mental Health is now starting to monitor so-called suicide hotspots, places where suicides are committed more frequently than elsewhere. One such notorious place used to be Nusle Bridge in Prague, which opened in the early 1970s. Between 200 to 300 people are estimated to have jumped off the bridge before barriers were erected there in 2007. Alexander Kassal again.
Our program will focus on places where people frequently commit suicide, especially places from which they can jump down or where they can jump under a car or a train. The goal of our project is to identify places with higher suicide rates, which have been provided to us by the National Railway Administration. If we find such places, we can recommend steps to improve the situation, such as erecting barriers or employing guards or camera systems to monitor the place.
According to Mr. Kassal, foreign studies have shown that installing signs offering consulting services have also contributed to curbing suicides committed in given locations. The total number of suicides committed in the Czech Republic has been steadily decreasing in the noughties, but after 2008 they started increasing again. In 2015, nearly 1,400 people committed suicide, with most of these fatalities being men. Despite the relatively high suicide rate, the Czech Republic is still doing better than many countries in Eastern Europe, such as the Baltic states.
Ruth Frankova reporting there. Now, the most successful tennis player in professional tennis and winner of a record 19 Grand Slams, Roger Federer, is in Prague, with the days counting down ahead of the first ever Laver Cup. The tournament will pit Team Europe and Team World against each other, captained by tennis legends Bjorn Borg and John McEnroe. Understandably, both sides want to win. Jan Wellinger reports.
On one side, Team Europe, Federer, Nadal, Cilic, Thiem, Zverev and Burdick, captained by Bjorn Borg. Against them, Team World, Sock, Kyrgios, Isner, Query, Del Potro and Shapovalov, captained by McEnroe. Team Europe is favoured with two of the top-ranked players in the world, but don't count the other side out. Everyone knows how McEnroe, one of the best serve and volley players to have ever played the game, equally famous for his once explosive temper, hates to lose. Betting agencies know which way they're going, giving a probability of winning of 75% to Team Europe. The big winners, though, should be viewers and attendees. Above all, Roger Federer made clear the Laver Cup was about good tennis and tough competition. In Prague on Monday, he suggested no one should compare the tournament to an exhibition.
I know some people mention that word. I don't even like it, because it should not be that case, because we're playing in the honor and the legacy of Rod Laver, Bjorn Borg. Definitely wants to win. John McEnroe, I know he does not want to lose, even though we're the big favourites. So I really hope that all the players are going to show up here and really want to win.
Federer was in Prague back in February to first promote the new tournament, even trading serves on a court on a boat under Charles Bridge with friend and fellow Team Europe member Tomáš Berdych, the Czech man's number one. Federer made clear on Monday that interest in the Laver Cup since had exceeded even his expectations.
I was here a few months ago to, you know, promote the event and hopefully to have tickets be sold out, and they were sold out in record time. So to be back here now, a few days away from the start of it all, it's really nice to see how far the Laver Cup has come. It's nice to be back in Prague. I love this city and can't wait to play here.
The Laver Cup begins on Friday and will be broadcast by Czech TV. It's not yet known who will play in the opening match. A day before, Captains Borg and McEnroe will submit their lineup cards for Friday's matches to a referee in a blind exchange, and the matchups will only then be revealed at a special on-court ceremony.
Jan Wellinger there with that curtain raiser on the Laver Cup. Now it's time for our regular feature with Ruth Frankova.
Jakub Čech is a successful sound engineer who has worked on countless Czech films, but years of work have left him in poor shape. He decided to improve his health by taking up long-distance hiking. Last year, Jakub completed the Pacific Crest Trail, spanning over 4,000 kilometers from Mexico to Canada through California, Oregon, and Washington. He covered the details of the journey in a blog which has just been published as a book. When I met with Jakub, I first asked him how his passion for hiking started.
I had a very active childhood. I was a Boy Scout and we were hiking a lot. But when I started to study film faculty, I cut off all my other activities. I used to work very much, like 84 hours per week. And when I was 40, I ruptured my Achilles heel. Then my doctor told me I have serious problem with my livers. So I had to change almost everything. I changed my diet, my style of living, and I knew I have to do something physical. And I knew that gym is not an option for me. So I remember that hiking was fun when I was a kid. And my first hike was like 14 kilometers, and I was about to die after that. So I tried it again and again, and in the end of the season, I was able to hike like 50 kilometers per day. So I decided to do Camino, which is like traditional way to Santiago de Compostela. And when I finished Camino and I went out from the cathedral in Santiago, I met two guys from States and I said, someday I would like to do something like PCT, but I don't know if I'm ready yet. And they said, if you did Camino in such a short time, you definitely can do it. And we can promise it to you because we are organizers of kickoff on PCT. So just buy those maps, this guide, and we want to see you next year on PCT.
So and that was it, basically. Yeah. You knew at that moment that you were ready for
it. Yeah. So I did one more small hike over the Corsica on GR20, which is splendid European hike. And next year after that, I was standing on the Mexican border with United States, and I started and I went to north until I reached Canada.
Why have you chosen Pacific Crest Trail in particular? Was it the length that attracted you?
Well, mostly it was the diversity of environment, because you start in the desert. After 1 month, you climb up into 3,000, 4,000 meters, and you are in the high mountains. Then you go through Yosemite Park and then through woods of Oregon and many lakes. And it's really, really rich. So that was why.
So what was it like when you stood at the Mexican-US border and the whole trail was ahead of you?
I couldn't believe it's happening. And I actually had a dream first month. Every day I dreamed that I'm back home and talking with my friends. And then they say, oh, you were hiking PCT, what you are doing here? And I panicked. I said, I have to come back. What happened? I have to finish it. Then I woke up in sweat and I realized I'm there and everything is all right. So I couldn't believe it for the first month that it's really happening, but it was great.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the trail? How popular is it in the United States or in the world among hikers? Do you have any idea how many people actually walk it annually?
Well, we could say it's a holy grail of hikers. It wasn't so popular, let's say, 5 years ago. There were like 300 people hiking it every year from the beginning till the end. But after the release of movie Wild with Reese Witherspoon, it got very popular. So nowadays 3,000 or 4,000 people are attempting to hike it all the way. But you are hiking almost all the time alone, if you wish. There were days where I met just one person or two persons. Sometimes I joined someone. So I could say I spent like 2/3 alone, which was great. It was like spending time in monastery. And this is one of biggest benefits which I see in such a hike.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you, because for me that would probably be one of the most difficult things, at least at the beginning, to get used to the solitude.
What I loved was to hike all day alone and then join other people in the evening in the camp, which was quite easy because there is not many places where you can sleep on the way. It's a really small path and there is a ridge or bushes, so you cannot sleep there. Once I had to sleep straight on the path and hope that no one will go over the night. So it was quite easy to meet someone, have a little talk in the evening, and then I could hike alone again.
You started your journey in April,
right?
On the US-Mexican border. Is spring the best season to start the trail? Because all in all, you spent 4 months on the way.
Well, all depends on the weather. So there is a 1 month or 2 month window when you can start if you are going north. There is other possibility to go south from Canada to Mexico. But if you go north, you should start in April or May because there is not too much heat on the desert and there is not too much snow in mountains. So you have to hit the time when it starts melting. And you have to reach Canada before snow comes again. So that's why.
What about the equipment? Because as you said, you walked through the desert and through the mountains and through very different weather conditions. So what kind of equipment did you have, and did you actually have a tent to sleep in?
Well, there is a saying that the lightest thing you carry on is the one which you leave at home. And you have to carry just the things you really need, not the things you want to have. And the second thing is that you are trying to have multi-purpose for all the stuff you are having. So, for example, I had a tent, I had just a poncho, which I used in the rain, and as a simple tarp in the night when the weather was bad. But most of the time I was sleeping under the stars. I actually hadn't sleeping bag. I had a quilt, which is equivalent of a blanket. So that's how I could carry just 6.5 kilos.
And now we are talking about the basic equipment without food and water.
Yeah. Plus food and water. It's so-called base weight. So then you have to carry like 2 pounds of food per day and 1 or 2 liters, it depends on the area which you are passing through. Of course, it's much more on the desert when you are carrying 7 liters of water some days. And of course, you have to get some extra equipment for the highest mountains, like micro spikes, snow eggs. In some areas, you have to carry so-called bear canister, which protects your food against bears. But except this short area in Sierra Nevada, I carried only 6.5 kilos of base weight.
So what about supplies? How often could you actually buy food on your way?
There is always possibility once a week to climb down to some town or small village where you could either buy food or you can send there your resupply box. So there were people who sent 30 boxes ahead and they just pick it up as they hiked. I sent just 3 boxes and then I found out that people around the trail are already used to hikers and they have a lot of hikers products in their local shops. So it's basically dehydrated food like mashed potatoes, ramen noodles. So it was easier for me than just buy it as I hiked.
So what was the most challenging thing about the whole project? You already said that you enjoyed the solitude. Were bears, for example, something that you were afraid of?
If you ask what was the hardest was the return to civilization, actually. After months when you had a clear head, you just had to answer all those emails and phones and read the papers and so on. But if you are talking about a challenge on the trail, it actually were not bears or rattlesnakes or mosquitoes or highest mountains, but it was in the North California when it started to be a little bit boring. I mean, I had the most beautiful part behind me. I just climbed down from mountains and I was still hiking up and down, up and down. And I was thinking, oh, why I'm doing it? I'm quite tired and I have no panoramas around me anymore. But all the people before I started this hike told me there will be a day when you will want to give it up and you will be tired and annoyed and you will have doubts. And when it came, I said, okay, this is it. So now I have to hike on and it will be better tomorrow.
You said the return to civilization was one of the most difficult things. Mm-hmm. Did it also help you in some way in your working mm-hmm. life, let's say?
You should ask my friends and my family. But I think I'm not so ambitious now. I care about my free time and I'm not so nervous at work. I was always very impulsive and screaming to everyone. And nowadays I speak more quietly and I think I changed. Work is not everything for me now.
And what about hiking? Are you already planning another journey?
Yeah. I was able to do just a small hike this year, only 900 kilometers over Scotland. But I'm planning another long distance hike for next year over the Rocky Mountains, which would be like 5,000 kilometers. And who knows what will come next.
Jakub Cech there talking to Ruud Frankova about his hiking passion. If you've any comments about that programme or others today, please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely happy to hear from you. From me, Chris Johnston, goodbye.